a colossal monster, a city in ruins, no way out, except inside of the all-electric Toyota CHR. John Cho stars in Escape. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family today. Toyota, let's go places.
Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week, we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the founders, clinicians, patients, investors and CEOs that are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners will know, I am the CEO and founder of PocDoc, which is empowering people to detect and prevent chronic diseases quickly and easily using their phone. Our Healthy Heart Check, PocDoc's Healthy Heart Check, which delivers the equivalent of an NHS health check in 10 minutes just using your phone, is available in Well Pharmacy, Pharmacy to You, as well as our own website. So if you want any more information, please go to pocdoc.co. Thanks, as ever, to everyone listening on the amazing UK Health Radio Live. It's really great to have you with us. Thanks for keeping on listening. Please feel free to check out any of the other presenters on the station. There's some amazing content out there. Thank you if you're listening on any of the podcast channels on demand. We're now broadcasting, or people are downloading, in over 50 countries every month, which is amazing. Really appreciate you being here. And if you're watching any of the clips on Instagram on my channel at Steve Roost, then it's great to see you. So thank you very much for everyone being here. Last week's show was with Rachel Carroll, who's the CEO of Coru Kids, the leader in actually nanny care in the UK, the industry number one. Her phrase, childcare is an infrastructure, seems to have really resonated with a lot of people that were listening. And actually the clip of Rachel explaining that 33 hours of childcare is not actually 33 hours of childcare has already gone viral on our Instagram channel. So if you want to listen to that show, check it out with Rachel Carroll. On to today's show. So today's show is a return to the front line of the fight against cancer. For regular listeners, you know that about 6 months ago, we did a show with Peter Cowley, who was a very good friend of mine, a mentor, and one of the first investors in PocDoc, and Craig Maxwell, who both had stage four lung cancer, specifically a type of lung cancer called EGFR. It was a super emotional show. And sadly, just before the end of 2024, Peter passed away. Craig has gone on to get the OBE because he's raised about a bajillion pounds for his charity, which is focused on enhancing access to liquid biopsy for lung cancer treatment. So if Craig, if you're listening, congratulations, mate, like you deserve it. And on today's show, so we're continuing on in this theme or returning to this theme, we have Jane McClelland, who is author of the best-selling book, How to Starve Cancer, a three-time cancer survivor, and an advocate for approaching cancer care differently, her phrase being a middle path between traditional pharmacological radiation therapy and doing different things, whether it's disrupting the metabolic pathway or using off-label drugs. So we're going to get into all of that. Alongside her, we have a very special guest, onto today's show, Russell Hobson, who has got up at 2 o'clock in the morning from New Zealand to join this. So thank you very much for getting up early or late, whichever way around. Russell's a good friend of mine, and he has had a long career in advertising in the UK and Australia. Russell was diagnosed with stage four pancreatic cancer in April 2023, and quite understandably has taken some time to focus on dealing with that. I was talking to Russell. I wanted to get Russell on the show, actually, because when we were talking about his cancer in the early days, he mentioned Jane and that he was looking and super interested in what Jane was talking about and that Jane would be a great guest for the show. So I thought it'd be great to get Russell on. Today's probably going to be a bit of an emotional show. So, like, I guess consider that your trigger warning to everyone listening, and apologies if that happens. I also want to say that, and I say this whenever we deal with topics on the show that are sensitive and that people care deeply about. If you're listening to this and you have cancer or you know someone that does have cancer, please don't take what we discuss on this show as any indication that you should change the treatment that you're currently undergoing without discussions with your doctor or oncologist or whoever's dealing with your care. The purpose of this show is always about having discussions with really interesting people who have really interesting views. It's not a show by doctors to determine how you should deal with your care. So, with that all being said, let's get into it. Jane, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on to the
Oh,
show.
thank you so much for inviting me. And I'm super, super interested to meet Russell and discuss his progress with his cancer. Pancreatic cancer is something I know is so aggressive and so difficult to treat. You've got to get on it immediately. And I don't think we have the right cocktails for it at all. So I'm really interested to find out what he's picked up from following me and how he's doing.
Well, we can start there if you want. Russell, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, hello. Steve, good to see you. But it's not like I don't see you. James, amazing to meet you. A real honor, actually. Your book is, I'm sure you hear it all the time, but it's kind of inspirational in lots of ways. And I can talk much more about how that has manifested as we get on. I have no qualifications for being on this show other than I'm just a guy who happens to have cancer. And who read your book, Jane, probably when I very first got diagnosed. Well, actually, not when I got first diagnosed, probably about 6 months into being diagnosed, I suspect, like a lot of people. And up to that point in time, I'd been going along with the conventional treatments, and was feeling very dissatisfied with all that. As it stands at the moment, I mean, I don't know if Steve, this is helpful, but as it stands at the moment, I've been through front and second line chemotherapy. I'm currently being treated out of Peter Mac in Melbourne, which is an extraordinary institution. And again, happy to talk about that and how great a place that is. And I'm on a drug trial with a targeted therapy, which is targeting my KRAS G12D gene, which is one of the breakthrough potential therapies that are going on at the moment. And I'm stable, and in fact have been stable throughout. And I'm not currently on chemotherapy. I'm not currently doing actually very much in terms of other cancer and treatment protocols because I'm on a trial. And again, it might be interesting to talk a bit about that and how that works a bit later on, because I think there's some very interesting things about how, as a patient, that care manifests. And the deal, inverted commas, that you effectively do between the drug company where you're getting treated and yourself and how that all works. So yeah, so that's where I'm at. So I'm very much a patient perspective.
Brilliant. And are you stage four, or how did they diagnose you to start with? Did they come in and say, "I'm sorry, it spread, you're beyond an operation"? Did you have the Whipple? What happened? Are you?
No. I've had no operative intervention at all. So I am stage four. So I have secondaries in my liver, and I was diagnosed. So I've basically been having stomach pain for about a year in the run up to April 23, which is when I got diagnosed, and was constantly getting diagnosed with diverticulitis and IBS and all kinds of stuff that was basically in the wrong place. It wasn't really anyone's fault. I just had pain in the wrong place. I then eventually took myself off to, I had a speaking engagement in Sydney. I live in Auckland, New Zealand. Had a speaking engagement in Sydney over and then I had terrible, terrible pain. And eventually just came back to Auckland and said, right, I'm not going to leave A&E in hospital until they tell me what's wrong. I spent a week in hospital. And at the end of that week, they said, and I suspect this happens to a lot of people. My diagnosis went from kind of not too bad to not great to not good at all to pretty terrible.
They kind of lead you in slowly with these things. And did you have diabetes? Did it cause diabetes at the same time? Very often people get diabetes as a side effect, or just part of the syndrome of having pancreatic cancer. That can be a problem. So you've not had
No,
that checked, or
no.
your
The weird
insulin
thing
levels.
is that right here, right now, as my GP in New Zealand said to me the other day, you're the wellest sick man I know. So I'm sort of looking after my son, my wife works. In many respects, life is pretty normal. I have to go to Melbourne twice a month,
Right.
to basically pick up my trial drug and get looked at by the guys there.
Okay.
But right here, right now, I'm pretty well.
Okay, brilliant. I've just actually recorded my own podcast with a stage four survivor. He's now 8 years.
Right.
And he kind of independently looked at all the stuff that I look at on my Metro map. So he took hydroxychloroquine, metformin, statin, aspirin. You are going to love this podcast when it comes out. So I'll try and get it out maybe this week or next week, but keep an eye out for that.
I
But I think
will.
it's going to be super interesting for anyone with pancreatic cancer because it covers, some of these main pathways that cancer uses. So, in my book, I have something called a Metro map, then that's a sort of a guide. It's a rough guide as to the nutrient feeding pathways that different cancers use. And with pancreatic cancer, the macropinocytosis, which will mean nothing to anybody listening, but it's a way to actually bring in nutrients. It's a sort of the way the cell membrane involutes and pulls in nutrients from the surrounding area. That particular pathway is really, really upregulated with, so super expressed for pancreatic cancer patients. So that there is, it's a matter of trying to deduce the, that's my approach, is to look at the feeding, slowing down the growth by blocking or trying to block some of these key pathways. But
Well,
you've got, yeah.
let me
Sorry,
jump let me jump in on that one.
Steve.
No, it's all right. You guys, I feel like you guys could run this show without me, which is
We
actually,
probably could today.
which
Yeah,
is,
sorry.
to be honest with you, that's actually ideal. That's when we get the best shows. So I want to pick up on that one bit of it because obviously not everyone listening is at quite the level of
No.
in-depth knowledge around what you guys are going through or have gone through. So let's talk about the Warburg effect and the metabolism around cancer cells, because I think that that leads into what you're sort of talking about, right, Jane? Is like it's this
Yes, it does.
underlying.
That's one key pathway, but there are, it's a way to pull the nutrients in to fire up these pathways. So you've got the Warburg effect, which effectively is the sort of the looking at glucose, pulling that in as well. But the macropinocytosis, which I was just quickly mentioning there, it's
Yeah,
just
sure.
pulling in the other things. That's actually pulling in amino acids, so it's pulling in proteins and fat and things like that, and actually using those as partly to fuel the it needs energy. All cancer cells are really, really hungry, so they're constantly trying to pull in nutrients from everywhere they possibly can. And this is just one of the many methods that it uses, and pancreatic cancer in particular, because it's actually bypassed by a lot of the nutrients because of the position of where it is in the body. The food actually goes past it and doesn't actually go into it, so it kind of misses out on some of the food. So actually uses this different way of pulling in nutrients because it's the location of where it is in the body.
And is that new research that's come out about how those
No.
pancreatic cells function?
No, you just have to know where to look.
So it's already pre-existing in literature, is it?
Yeah, and
Okay.
everything I say is backed up by something in the literature. I don't just pull these things out of nowhere. I'm a deep researcher, if you like. I have to look into these pathways, but it's actually easier. These days, you've got AI. I am constantly on AI now because I find Perplexity AI is brilliant. Some AIs which are not so good, but you have to
Yeah.
kind of double check from one AI to another. But you've also got consensus AI for looking at trials, for looking at papers, PubMed, etc., and
Yeah.
actually seeing whether trials are in humans, in mice, in vitro, whatever. And you can actually get an idea of the level of evidence at which
So
you're
are
looking
you
at.
writing a prompt that basically says, can you share evidence
Yes.
around this particular
Yeah.
thing? And then it
Or
summarizes it.
can you explain why hydroxychloroquine would work for pancreatic cancer? And then it will come up with all the PubMed articles. It'll come up with, it'll actually look at, and then you can ask it, would it work in combination with, and then you put chemo or whatever, and you can actually look at the combination of what you're doing. And it'll, and very often there won't be any literature about the synergies because that's the problem. We don't have anything about one thing working with another.
Although I read a paper in research for this show, so when I told Russell that we'd booked you for the show, he was like, "Look, do some research. I was like, okay, Russell, it's okay. I'm going to do some research. Don't worry about it. I'm going to do it. Okay. So I read a paper actually. My wife, who is, she works in oncology drug discovery. So she's obviously in and around this area as well. And she shared a paper with me that was called Starvation, Stress Resistance, and Cancer by Buono and DeLongo et al. And it showed data where FMD, so fasting mimicking diets, actually alongside chemotherapy seemed to make the chemotherapy more tolerable and potentially, subject to further trials, more effective. I think that was the key phrase. When I was doing research for this show, I'd love to get your thoughts on it. There was a lot of these blanket statements in the papers, which was pending further investigation or
Always
pending
have to put
trials or
that. They
pending
always warn
random
you.
controlled trials. But what's that all about?
Because the problem is that randomized clinical trials are not done on things that don't have patents. So how do you do it? And how do you actually persuade the medical profession? They rely on randomized clinical trials for everything. And this is a big problem. We need to be looking more at real world evidence, which is something I'm trying to push, and looking to study populations. I'm going to go for small islands, all right, and see
Okay.
if we can actually change the survival statistics. It's going to need a lot of work on my behalf
Yeah.
to actually get a whole island to kind of get on board and get the medical team to get on board with changing the strategy of what they do. And I'm having a go with my home island of Guernsey in March.
Go on
I'm
Channel
going,
Islands.
yes.
My grandfather was a Guernseyman,
Oh,
liberated
there you
Guernsey
go.
after the war.
So I'm going back there in March and I'm having a go at trying to persuade the population over there. I don't know. I think I'm going to get too much resistance. I don't know.
Okay.
But I'm going to try and see if I can get, because they're independent, they're not bound by the same rules as the NHS, etc. They follow very much the same pattern and they take their, their guidelines from the NHS, but they don't have to be exactly the same. So in a way, this is good. And, being a native, I'm hoping that I'm going to persuade them that I'm not doing it for any other. It's not me trying to make money out of them or whatever. I don't make any money out of off-label drugs. There's nothing in it for me.
No.
It's just trying to encourage the population to actually get on board and look at cocktails of old drugs in combination with chemo and actually get them at the beginning, right when they're diagnosed. That would be the most important time to actually look at the metabolism of cancer and to slow it down before they even go for an operation or chemo or surgery, whatever,
Makes sense.
or radiotherapy. It's actually getting in there first. That's what
So
I'm really wanting.
I want to pick up on something that Russell said. So, like Russell, right at the beginning, you said you got diagnosed, huge shock, obviously, and then you sort of embrace, I guess, engaged with whatever the standard pathway was, right? Whatever that was, and then at some point after a few months, you were, I think you said disenchanted or sort of not thrilled, I guess. Like, how much of that not being thrilled was about the diagnosis itself versus the options you were being presented with? Is
Well, I
that
was being presented with no options. So
oh.
my initial first line chemo didn't well, A made me incredibly ill, FOLFIRINOX, and also didn't work. And my second line chemo was working, but it was very apparent. And one of the things I'm very here to keen to hear Jane talk about a bit is the culture of oncology around the world, because obviously I'm engaging with, to some extent, the Australian system, the New Zealand system, and the English system, because I have an oncologist in the UK as well. And it's my experience thus far, it's my experience of other people who have cancer, and in fact, it's enshrined really in the book, of the culture of, let's say, disinterest in the mainline oncology sector around anything else that could be of help. Like the profound sort of disinterest in anything you're doing above and beyond the drugs that they're pushing. And I think, so much of it comes back to the business of oncology, the business of cancer, and the way in which drugs are tested and marketed
Wait,
ultimately.
sorry, go
Go
on.
on.
So no, I was going to say, when you say disinterest, like was when you went to your oncologists to talk about other ideas, was it literally disinterest, or what was it, like, how much of this is
Well, I mean,
aided?
I've had some nice ones, right? And so
Right.
I would say disinterest. I would say experience of other people who are friends of mine, I'd say out and out contempt.
Wow. Yes,
Yeah,
and
I'll
even to the
completely.
point, where they'll actually refuse to treat you if you do anything that they, if you deviate from what they're Are
suggesting.
they okay?
Yeah.
And okay. So, and how these other ideas. So in your book, Jane, you've kind of got these like four or five, maybe six pillars. You've got metabolism and how to interrupt the metabolism growth or metabolic growth, nutrient growth, I guess, of the tumor itself. You've got how nutrition affects it. You've got repurposed medications. Then you've got supplements and this detoxification environment piece. And then you've got the mind and body piece. Of those bits of it, right? I would argue, I would pro just sample one. The stuff around the metabolism, the nutrition, the repurposed medications has probably got more literature backing it up than some of the supplement detoxification of the environment, mind and body stuff. Is that a fair assessment or not
Yeah, I
fair?
don't talk much about the detox, to be honest. I mean, that's not really me. But and I think you should probably detox it, but you can do that with generally just getting a healthy diet and not having too many toxins in your diet. But so I would say that starving the cancer is the central tenet to whatever I say. Starving it by whatever means is important. So the work that you're looking at, I think is quoting Volta Longo, who was looking at the fasting mimicking diet
Yeah,
before and
the
after
FMD stuff.
chemo.
Yeah,
Yeah,
FMD.
so that he's done a lot of work. He's very well respected in that area, and the fasting mimicking diet does show a huge benefit in combination with chemo, because what you're doing is you're making the cancer weaker so that the cancer can attack it more effectively.
But and that
And
was
it's,
in but that was in mice. And so is does it go back
yeah.
to your previous point where it's like there isn't any money to prove this out
No, but
in
he is actually doing trials in humans
Oh,
as well.
cool.
Yeah, he is. He's doing a trial with colorectal patients. He's published, I'm sure he's published something on it, but he's looking at fasting mimicking diet and intravenous vitamin C together for colorectal cancer. And this is people with KRAS, because this is the thing, is that intravenous vitamin C will work better with KRAS-driven cancers. And I don't know whether you're familiar with the phase two trial that's just been finished in University of Iowa with Professor Joe Cullen. I was just on the talking to him last week, and I need to do a podcast with him. And it's including intravenous vitamin C between the chemo sessions. So he did a phase two study, and he had, I can't remember how many people he had on the trial. It wasn't a huge number, it was something like 56 or something, but the survival doubled from 8 months to 16 months just by having that intervention. And some
That
of
was
them
the
are
only
still,
change. The only
what?
change. It was the only thing they did. The
That was
difference
the
was the
only
only
thing they
thing.
changed. So no other variables, just changing by adding intravenous vitamin C into the cocktail between the chemo sessions. Totally doubled the survival time. The other thing that he looked at was his phase one study was looking at intravenous vitamin C alongside radiotherapy. That was even better. And patients, this is pancreatic cancer patients doing that. There are still two or three of, there's a report, some, I think three of them from 9 years ago are still alive. All right. That's unheard of with pancreatic cancer. So the trials are being done. They're just not, there was no news anywhere. This is a radio show. I'm actually talking about it on a radio show. This is, it was, I think it was mentioned quickly on Fox News, and that was it. But this should be major headlines
Well,
everywhere.
let's dig into that because I think it ties back a little bit with what Russell was hinting at about, it's not a conspiracy theory necessarily, but are there kind of forces at work or sort of
There are.
macro conditions here
Yeah.
that incentivize one set of behaviors and disincentivize another set of behaviors and things like that. But my producer is waving frantically at me to go for our first commercial break. So we will be back in 2 minutes on this very special show with Jane McClelland, author of How to Starve Cancer, and Russell Hobson, one of the leading lights of the UK and Australian advertising scene. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Good, Hello and welcome back to the second part of this week's show, this week's Health Tech Hour, with me, Steve Roost, and my guest, Jane McClelland, author of How to Starve Cancer, and Russell Hobson, one of the leaders of the UK on Australian advertising scene, and also currently cancer patient. So before we took a break, I guess I want to kind of roll it back a little bit to this kind of concept around how sort of nefarious, I guess, versus apathetic do you believe the existing industry, healthcare industry, is to the sort of metabolic theory about starving cancer, the repurposing of drugs, and the sort of leverage of nutrition in the sort of cancer prevention or slowing cancer down? Or do we say cure? Do we use the word cure? I'm not sure we do. I don't know if we do or not.
Cure, I don't think. If you're asking me from my personal experience of what I've seen, the medical suppression or the censorship that I've encountered has been quite intense, particularly recently. So
what,
in the
what
last
happened recently? Did something
well
trigger
in the
that?
Last couple of years, there's been a definite increase in trying to suppress the metabolic approach. I don't know whether it's because they're trying to push new therapies like mRNA vaccines or whatever, and they're just worried about dissenting voices talking about, you know, the problems with the mRNA spike proteins and, you know, just all the vaccines that were around for COVID. So there's a lot of, they're trying to suppress any kind of dissenting voices around that, but also they're trying to suppress the information about the metabolic approach, right? So for me, they have...
Who is they? Who's they? Sorry, who is this?
Okay,
they?
If I'm going to name names,
well, not like Mr. This and Mrs. That, but just maybe can we just go one more level, more specific?
I can tell you exactly who these people are, but you know, I don't want to run into too much trouble here.
There's
a breast cancer surgeon.
Okay,
and probably find out who she is. She's got breast cancer, and she's my kind of my nemesis. All right.
Okay.
She hates me, and she is very much, you know, if you look at her pay and who she's paid by, Pfizer's in there, and there's a whole load of other people, and she's, you know, she gets money to sort of promote the big pharma approach. All right.
Okay.
She has been working with Dr. David Grimes. Okay, and they have together formed this BBC Global Misinformation Unit.
Okay.
Right? So
you mean the BBC, like the TV BBC?
The World Service have kind of decided that they're going to be the arbitrators of who listens to what, and they are going to decide what everybody's opinion is, or, you know, they're going to put forward their opinion on what's misinformation and what isn't. And they do things like they change. If you look on Wikipedia, if you look at the Warburg effect.
Yeah. Which I did.
Look
which I
that
did.
Up.
The and by the way, just to put Russell's mind at ease, I also read the actual source literature, Russell. Don't panic.
Okay. So the first reference that you come to should be Otto Warburg, right?
Yeah.
Warburg effect.
Should be.
It isn't. It is Liz O'Riordan. I'm saying their names now.
Oh, no.
And David
come on.
Grimes. All right.
Okay.
With their opinion piece in The Lancet saying that it's not metabolism that causes any of the, you know, glycolysis, etc. It is down to just purely genetics. Now, there is a genetic component. Obviously, there's genetics and there's metabolism. Mm. But it's kind of like, no, don't. And do you know what the article's called?
No.
Quackery, Starving Cancer and Other Dietary Misconceptions. Right? So anybody
who
suggests...
Pretty bold.
Anybody who suggests anything different to the standard big pharma line is a quack. All right. And that's their kind of approach, is to try and discredit me by saying that I'm a quack because I suggest people have a low glycemic diet. I don't suggest they do keto. I've never said do keto, and certainly not with pancreatic cancer. You certainly want to avoid keto because you can get cachexia with.
What's cachexia?
Cachexia is like it's like anorexia for cancer. So you get this wasting away. And what's happening with cachexia, you get a lot of inflammation, you get a lot, and it's the cancer feeding on your muscles. It actually breaks down your muscles, breaks down the fat. You get a huge amount of weight loss. And this is a particular syndrome that is particularly high in pancreatic cancer. I mean, I've talked to a lot of pancreatic cancer guys, and Russell, you don't look like you've, I don't know how much weight you've lost.
20 kilos. I mean, I was carrying weight that
Oh.
I didn't need. And one of the great ironies at the moment is that a lot of, my wife does a lot of social media posting of me. I don't do any, but everyone's like, "Oh my God, you look amazing. Are you better?"
Do the people say
And of course,
that? Yeah,
oh
they do.
yeah. And of course, it's summer here, so you know, I get a bit of sun on my face, and I've lost a load of weight, and everyone's like, "You look great." And my hair's grown back, and everything's great. And I, you know, I certainly when I had initial chemo, I lost that in 2 weeks. In my first 2 weeks, and I was very, very ill indeed. But anyway, that was probably slightly different. But you know, I if I may, just on this issue, you know, I'm no one in this debate, but obviously I've spent a long my whole years in business, and I can see very clearly the hand of commerce throughout my experience of having cancer, and particularly around this debate. And you can see why. Whenever you talk to oncologists and you talk to them about, and this should take vitamin C, which is a relatively benign topic, versus you know the metabolic question. You know, vitamin C has been proven time and time again to have positive effects on cancer patients across a number of different cancers. As I understand it, in China at the moment, it's becoming a much more standardized operation that happens alongside other treatments. And as Jane will talk about, it's always about the combinations of things that you're doing, as much as about the single therapy that you're doing. And if you know, if I can create an analogy from my own business, if someone came to me and said, "Look, Russell, here's an interesting way to target an extra 3 million people and motivate them to do X, Y, or Z," I'd be really interested in that, right? But you go to an oncologist and you go, "Here's a thing that has been proven in vitro, in vivo, whatever it might be, you know, or possibly in other broader trials," they honestly look at you like you're wasting my time, and they go, "That's great." And I think, as I say, that's the most benign of the responses. You know, occasionally, you know, I know plenty of people whose people will say, "A, I won't even help you, you know, prescribe this stuff, but B, I actively discourage you from doing it." And I find that extraordinary. Why isn't there more interest amongst the cohort of health professionals whose job it is to fight cancer in fighting cancer in other ways? I just don't understand.
Can I just jump in there? I just want to just check on something because you've mentioned vitamin C, Jane, and you've just mentioned vitamin C there. So what is the actual sort of bottom line evidence base
All
for
right.
use of
So,
vitamin C alongside other therapies? Let's
yes.
just
So
get
the
that.
point is that it's not taken at low, you know, orally. We don't want it taken orally. So back in the 1970s, Linus Pauling was very sure that intravenous vitamin C, plus he was using some oral as well, but it's the intravenous stuff that you get the level of vitamin C up to a point in the system where it reacts with the cancer cell, the iron in the cancer cell partly, and then it releases hydrogen peroxide, which is a free radical, right? And hydroxyl ions as well. So those react with the cancer and kill it. Right, so it is pro-oxidant, it's not antioxidant. Whereas you take it orally, it is antioxidant. Now, there were two trials done back in the 70s, one done by Linus Pauling, the other one done by, I think it was the Mayo Clinic, and they were using oral. So they completely discredited the research that Linus Pauling did. I think he went mad. By the time he finished his life, he was so angry that it drove him to the point of madness. Which is such a shame because he actually gave us all this information, but integrative therapists have always thought this was incorrect. They've done it incorrectly, and they've been carrying on giving the intravenous vitamin C, but it's pro-oxidant. That's why it works synergistically with chemo and radiotherapy, which are also pro-oxidant.
Have there been more recent studies that show that Vit C intravenously has a significant, statistically significant positive impact on?
Yes, I mean, so Joe, this Professor Joe Cullen at Iowa University has been looking into this, and he actually got the NIH to finally sponsor a trial. How he got them to actually do it, I don't know. I mean, amazing to actually finally get a proper body to actually investigate this. But he's going to be doing more work looking at other cancers as well. So his first one was on pancreatic cancer. That is one of the worst cancers you can get, and you can actually see survival times relatively short periods because, you know, if you get a survival more than 8 months, Perfect. Your average survival tends to be about 8 months if you're lucky with pancreatic cancer. So it's a very grim cancer to have, but you can see the results much easier with
Okay.
with those
Okay,
people.
so you both feel like based on that there's no kind of is there more scientific debate to be had about vitamin C, or is it actually about trying to break through this, whether this kind of access, well, it depends on the spectrum, right? On one end, apathy, on the other end, nefariousness, as you guys sort of are hinting at. Is that where we are, or is there still more scientific evidence that needs to be
Oh,
gathered about
we
vitamin
need
C?
to have the scientific evidence. And one of the things I've written about in my second edition of my book, which is still removed from Amazon. By the way, they took down all my books from Amazon in the UK.
No
All
way.
of them. Yeah, yeah,
What?
yeah. Silenced me completely.
No way. Can they? I mean, obviously they can do that, obviously, because they are a private company. But do they? What? But there must be loads of really weird stuff on Amazon that doesn't get taken
I know.
down. So
I
what?
know. And I have my book backed by some of the top oncologists in the world and cancer researchers. I actually got Professor
Wow.
Carol Sikora, who's ex-director of WHO Cancer Services, to actually write to Amazon and tell them, look, cancer patients are doing this already. People need to know what they are. Doctors need to know what they're doing because it's not going to stop. These people are already doing it. We need to encourage everybody to be more educated around this and actually take the conversation, open the discussion. That's
Because,
the
like,
whole point.
yeah, and I think from, and Russell, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Like, as I said at the beginning of the show, and I think you both have sort of hinted at it, this isn't about stopping quote unquote traditional.
Yeah.
No.
It's not about, oh my gosh, chemo, I'm not going to poison my body. It's not about any of that. This is about trying to figure out whether there's things that you can add into that
Correct.
make it better. Is that
Yeah.
correct?
Look,
Absolutely.
absolutely. I am the most boringly traditional person you'd never have got me in a health shop, prior to my diagnosis, right? But all I've ever tried to do since I got diagnosed was find out as much as I can. I've also so my sister died of non-small cell lung cancer, and my dad died of asbestos cancer. My elder sister has had oral cancer, but is in remission from that. So everyone in my family has either died from or had cancer, and it's probably going to get me, let's be honest. But the fact is that I'm still, I'm nearly 2 years in now, right? And a functioning member of society. And that is largely down to the fact that I think I have embraced as many things as I possibly could. Now, I don't know, and Jane, you're very honest about this, but you don't know what works and what doesn't most of the time, right? But you do know that if you are open-minded to the possibility of things that might work, you've got a much better chance. And I think that is a psychological truth as much as a physical truth, right? I really believe that if you have agency in your own treatment and you're aware of what's going on, you've got a much, much better chance. A huge amount of luck involved, right? No question about it. But there's no doubt in my mind that I'm still here because of all the things I've done in the time since I was diagnosed and started to sort of think about treatments other than, the more conventional ones. And it is just astonishing to me that there isn't more open-mindedness in this space, and that everything comes down. And this is why I talk about the work of, commercial background. You can see how clinical trials only get approved on things that are part of that world. Because there's no money to be made in testing metformin or vitamin C or any of these things that are already proven to be safe, and have no, are probably out of patent and have no money to be made on them. So I don't think it's a conspiracy. I mean, I don't, Jane, you're far, far more experienced than me, or you are to some extent the victim of some,
I
people
am.
that have a
I'm
strong
the,
point of view.
yeah.
But from my point of view, I look at it and I go, this is it's just business. But that in itself is a big, big problem for patients because, again, I look at being on a trial at the moment. I can't do anything. I can't take vitamin C at the moment. I can't take metformin. I can take statins. There's various things I can do, but there's a bunch of stuff I can't do because they're trying to isolate the effect of the drug. And I get that, right? And I'm on board with that. But it's not the best thing for me. The best thing for me would be to continue to do everything else alongside it, but it doesn't isolate the effect and it
So,
doesn't help the commercial enterprise that is inside that are the people that are putting forward this drug
Russ,
trial.
you're on this trial, right? Which is in Melbourne. What was the centre again? What's it called? The
The company's called Insight.
Insight. And so is it kind of just a complete lottery that you just happened to be on the trial and the drugs worked really well for you?
Absolutely it is. Yeah. So my oncologist, again, I don't want to moan too much about my oncologist. She's a lovely woman based out of Auckland here, but she used to work at, there's a whole bunch of things that happened to get me on that, right? She used to work at Peter Mac, so she knows the people. She understands the trial. I had my cancer, I had the genome of my cancer done very early on, located that it was a KRAS mutation. If I hadn't have done that, again, they wouldn't have known that I would be eligible for that trial. And the fact that I just also happened to be a permanent resident in Australia because we lived and worked there for a really long time. And this is it, right? Everything is a bloody lottery. Sorry, excuse me. Sorry.
That's okay.
It's a lottery.
Don't worry. Yeah.
Because, you know, it depends on where you are in the world, what your, you know, predilection is for looking around and understanding the world you're in, the people you have around you and the doctors you have. And if those things fall into place, you've got a chance of finding other therapies.
Wow. Well, on that note, we're going to do our second and final commercial break, and then we'll do the final part of the show. So we will be back in 2 minutes with the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with Russell Hobson and Jane McLennan. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the final part of this week's show, this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guests, Jane McClelland and Russell Hobson. So Jane, I want to take you back a little bit, way back to when you first decided to go on this trailblazing mission around these things. And
yeah.
I think it's easier, obviously, for someone like for us to look now at the work that you've written and things that you've done. But when you started, like, what was the landscape like?
Oh,
because it was massively different to now.
Totally different now. Like, we've got AI and all of this. We've got Facebook groups. We've got all sorts of areas. You've got chat rooms, all sorts of places where you can just pick up information. I mean, some of that, there's an awful lot of misinformation around and people pushing lots of things like cannabis or whatever, and is it useful or not? And I certainly think that CBD can be useful. I worry a little bit about the THC in certain situations, and I certainly don't, you know, I'm not advocating or recommending that people to do that. Mm. But I think we need to look back at, so my journey started in 1994, a long time ago.
Wow, pre-internet.
I'm quite old. But,
wouldn't,
you know,
be able to tell.
Back then, I was just, you know, quite newly diagnosed, well, newly qualified physiotherapist. I had some medical background. But I did exactly that. I did the traditional stuff to start with. Then my cancer came back in 1999 in my lungs. And that was after my mother had passed away from stage 4 breast cancer, which was the wake up call that I needed to look at other things beyond what I'd been doing. Unfortunately, she passed away with stage 4 after about 8 weeks in 96. And then my cancer came back in 99 in my lungs, at which point I was already doing a lot of stuff like green tea. I lowered my sugar levels in my body and I started to add some things in. But it was an enormous shock. But I was not completely floored by it because I kind of thought, right, I can do this. I know I can do this. I had some tools in my toolbox and I thought I'll start with that. But I was scouring everywhere. I was delving. I was going to the hospital. I was going through journals. I mean, I came across.
But you must have had to go through physical journals. In
yes.
Right?
Yes, I did.
The internet
I did.
Didn't exist.
Read, read, read. I'd like sit in the library all afternoon and go through stuff. So it was really hard because the internet was, you know, there's very little on the internet back then. So you had the Gerson therapy, macrobiotics, juicing, you know, all of those things going on. And I didn't feel that was enough. Anyway, it didn't turn out to be enough because in 2003, I had myelodysplasia. So that was like, that's related to the chemo and the radiotherapy and everything I had, because I had more when I had my lung chemo. So they gave me another huge dose of chemo. She said she's probably going to kill me with it. Anyway,
wow.
I actually, okay. But actually I managed to sort of, after three rounds of chemo. I said, please, please, please lower the dose. So we went to 50% at that point. But, and I think I probably would be dead if she'd carried on with the high dose, to be honest, at that point. But anyway, I then got this myelodysplasia, which is a type of, early leukemia. And what I did at that point was then start adding in some other drugs. So I'd looked at The Lancet. I'd found some information about dipyridamole, which is one of the drugs I added in. Now, that's not necessarily a good drug for leukemia patients to be on because you can have problems with your platelets. So, you can have clotting issues, whatever. So, it may not be appropriate for everyone. And this is what I say, you've got to do your own research, get a doctor on board. And then
Sorry,
I.
just to pick up on that point,
Yeah.
you would sort of recommend trying to find a clinician, a doctor, to
Yes,
sort of
I
be your
have.
buddy through this,
Yes,
a
I have a
qualified
list.
individual.
Yes, I have a list of doctors who follow me. I've got about 100 on my website, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, make it easy for you. Go to howtosolvecancer.com/doctors/, and you'll find a list of all the doctors who are working in this space, looking at adding in off-label drugs. It's not just me doing it. I have a little army out there now of clinicians who are actually backing up what I'm doing, and they are seeing amazing results. So, it's about getting a community together, which is going to take this forward. So, so the dipyridamole was one of the things I added in, aspirin. I actually then took an arthritis drug called Etodolac, so I couldn't use that all the time with the aspirin, and then I used statin. I took lovastatin, and I then later took cimetidine. And I was also taking something called berberine, which is a natural form of metformin. I then
Okay.
swapped to metformin later on, but it was the cocktail plus various supplements like quercetin, which can block this glucose one receptor. So normally in your muscles, they take up glucose through a receptor called GLUT4. Now your cancer cells take up cancer through GLUT1. So what you're trying to do is block specific receptors for the cancer. So this is what I try to do, is try and look at the different ways that the cancer cell can get nutrients in. And all of the stuff I use will actually curb and block some of those pathways that it uses. It's very
Well,
complicated,
yeah,
very
I mean
fancy.
it's yeah,
I've
it
probably
sounds
gone
like
way over people's heads there, but it's
no,
not about,
it sounds to me like, just to clarify, like you did a bunch of research in 96 going through journals, and you found there must have been hints at things, because there must have been
Yes.
some things that weren't exact,
Yep.
because no one did the trials and stuff, and you sort of experimented on yourself in partnership with other traditional treatments, chemo, radiotherapy, and a clinician guiding you,
Yes.
and it worked.
Yes. I actually went to three complementary doctors. I was just like picking their brains because the information was not there for me to read about. So I was
Yeah.
like trying to get as much information from them as I possibly could. Because Dr. Calabu, who was one of my doctors, he'd traveled the world. He'd been and visited lots of integrative doctors, like in India and everywhere. So he'd picked up a lot of information. And there was somebody called Ralph Moss, who I was following, and he'd written some books. So it was pretty difficult to find the right kind of information back there. And it wasn't focused really on my thought, was that I needed to starve, just slow the access of the cancer to getting all of these nutrients and slow it down. And I never expected to be here. Absolutely never expected to be here. I thought I was going to be dead within weeks. As soon as they discovered I had this other problem happening in my system, I thought, well, and they said, go back, have chemo. And I thought, well, I can't. The chemo is what's caused this. So I can't really go
Right.
back and have any more at that point. But I then added this cocktail, and within 7 months, I had something called the PKM2. I had a deleted P53. I had raised MMP. These are all markers of cancer,
Okay,
right? And
right.
everything normalized pretty much. Wasn't quite low enough with a PKM2, but I was pretty much normalized in about 7 months. And at that point, I kind of gave up and thought, oh, I don't need to be on these things anymore. I've done it. All
Yeah.
right. So, mistake. Following year, it came back again. So I then went back on my cocktail, and I've pretty much been doing it on and off ever since 2004. So, but
Right.
I've been in remission since then. I went
Right.
back into remission, and I'm still here.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so
Incredible.
how much of that resonates for you, Russell?
I mean, it's. I see when I was doing chemo, it was not so long ago. I would, you'd walk into that treatment room, and everyone who's had cancer knows that scene. You walk in to have your chemotherapy or whatever, and you can see absolutely the people that have got a chance of making it and people that don't, right? People that, there are people there that are kind of lay down, taking it, not asking any questions. And there are people that sit there and they've got a Tupperware full of nuts and water, and they've usually got Jane's book and a bunch of other books. And, my take on it is lots of people die with a positive attitude and an open mind, but everybody dies without it,
Right.
right? And
It's a good thing. Did
and
you
I
make that one
think
up? Did that come from you? Because that's a good
I
one.
like that. I
That's a
like
good
that.
one.
You're welcome. I have been an English teacher at one stage, but there was, and I think, Jane, you've been absolutely inspirational in terms of, the journey you've been on in your book, and also the what you know now. And I think you've saved countless lives for me. And there's lots of people you can't save because you just can't,
No.
right? And it's such a brutal journey you go on when you get cancer, and you're literally just casting around for people to help, and there aren't many in truth, because the oncologist, of course they help and of course they care. I'm not saying that's not the case, but they are just very, very, they have the blinkers on. And what just blows my mind is the fact that there's so little curiosity about different ways to treat cancer that are out there in the world, because there are lots of them.
Do you think it's very much like a lack of curiosity? Is that the feeling that you get?
I
What
don't,
is it?
honestly, Steve, I don't know, because I can't believe that these people aren't interested and curious, but that is how it manifests. As a patient, the patient experience is there's just no interest in anything other than chemotherapy, radiotherapy, operation, or immunotherapy. Actually, in my case, targeted therapies. Obviously, there's other stuff going on, but all the stuff that Jane does is proven to work. In lots and lots of cases, not every case, because nothing can work in every case, but it's been proven she has saved, I believe, many, many people. But there seems to be an active disassociation with it in the medical oncology
Well,
world.
I think, like, from what I can tell, having researched the show and things like that, and it is a sensitive area. And obviously, Jane, there are, forces at work against you, like getting you pulled off of Amazon and changing Wikipedia entries and all this sort of stuff. I wonder how much of it is like a misconception about what you're trying to communicate, which is you're not saying don't have chemo and you're not saying don't have radiotherapy. It's like there just happens to be some other things that you can also try. That's correct, right?
Yeah, that's correct. But they are trying to stop people getting intravenous vitamin C in the UK. There is active suppression going on. The intravenous vitamin C is not FDA approved.
No, and it's not, none of this stuff's on the NCCN either.
Yeah.
Although I read the NCCN today, and weirdly, it said it wouldn't recommend. So metformin was on for pancreatic, and then it came off. But it is on for bladder cancer. And I'm like, well, how does, I don't, it's all very confusing. I'm a lay person, so I tried to do my best, but it was quite confusing.
All right. So the problem is they test metformin on its own very often. And the way they've tested it is in non-diabetic patients. The people it works best in are the ones who actually have some sort of metabolic disorder going on where they're not processing their sugars properly and their insulin levels are too high. And actually in those patients, you tend to get a much better effect. So it should be tested in combination with therapies that actually help that. In fact, I'm going to do a podcast with an Italian researcher who was looking at metformin, and the way that he found it worked best was with fasting. All right. So you can use either fasting mimicking diet, you can use intermittent fasting. It doesn't have to be fasting for days on end. I mean, they were looking at mice, and I won't go into the full research at this point. I'll do it on a future
Well,
podcast.
we've got like 90 seconds left, so you can do the
Okay.
worst.
Well, no, but it's all about looking at the combination, and metformin is not looked at in the right combination when they're looking at trials. So they haven't actually got the concept of this metabolic flexibility, which is my Metromap. And you need to look at ways that there's something called synthetic lethality. That's a term that doctors may or may not understand, but that's looking at two synergistic pathways. If you block one, not much is going to happen. If you block the other, not much is going to happen. But you block them both together, boom, bingo, you get the result. And this is a problem. They're not testing synthetic lethality in these drug combinations.
Okay, well, look, on that note, we have to wrap up the show, but thank you very much to both of you for coming on. It was an incredible discussion, and I hope people listening took it in its entirety and really enjoyed it, because I know I certainly did. So Russell, thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure.
How was your first podcast intervention?
Very enjoyable, Steve. Thank you very much.
No worries. Great. Jane, thanks for coming on the show as well. Where can
Yeah,
people
thank
go
you.
if they want to find out more information?
Start with my website, howtosolvecancer.com. I've also got free information. Also, I've got tons of research in my Facebook group, Jane McClelland, Off-Label Drugs for Cancer. I don't like people posting anything other than PubMed articles for discussion. This is not a general chit-chat about
Yep.
all sorts of weird stuff. I like to keep to the science.
Perfect. Well, that's a great way to end. Thank you very much for everyone listening. We'll be back again next week. Thanks.